call the meeting to order and ask if Representative Long would move approval of the minutes from February 13th.
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Minutes are adopted. We have three bills on the agenda today, members, and for Thursday, we will have the Minnesota Can-Do Climate Action Bill, and that will be our Thursday hearing. With that, we have three bills today, as I said. Representative Stevenson, you want to start us off? Oh, and we do have a quorum present, if the clerk would note the quorum. Representative Stevenson.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I would move file 3209 be laid over.
Representative and Stevenson has moved House File 3209. And do you have an amendment?
I do, Madam Chair. I have, I believe it is the A3 amendment is an author's amendment, gets the bill in the shape that I would like the committee to consider it.
Representative Stevenson has a three author's amendment to put the bill in the shape he would like it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The amendment is adopted. Do you want to bring begin the bill and bring up your testifiers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill, I like to call the coal holiday bill. That's a holiday from coal. The old model for operating a coal power plant was that it needed to run essentially all the time to be an economic proposition. But the changing dynamics of our energy markets have made it such that it is no longer economical to run these facilities all the time, and there's substantial evidence that ratepayers can save significant amounts of money if the plants are idled, particularly in the shoulder seasons, in the spring and in the fall, when load is lower, when there's less demand for electrical services. So this bill is about providing utilities with the option to be able to take advantage of those savings. You know, we are fortunate in Minnesota to have electric utilities that are innovative and that are leading the way on climate-related issues, utilities like Kinexus and Xcel. And, you know, this committee has heard a lot about Xcel's leadership in this area over the last few months. First, being the first utility in the country to commit to going to 100% carbon-free by 2050. And then following that with a groundbreaking resource plan that made enormous investments in renewables, including wind and solar. But a little under the radar was an announcement that they made last month, which I also think they should be applauded for, which is that they asked the PUC for permission to not run two of their coal units in the spring and fall. And according to the filings with the PUC, that decision would save Xcel ratepayers $55 million over a three-year period. Pretty remarkable savings. I think that all ratepayers in Minnesota should know that their utilities are making the same calculation and have the tools available to them to save money. It's really a win-win proposition if we can both save ratepayers' money and significantly decrease carbon. So this bill just has two sections. The second section is a permissive section. It just allows utilities to make a filing with the PUC to seasonally operate their fossil fuel plants if it is economic to do so and if it's reliable to do so. The first section is, I think of it as the show your homework section of the bill. And it just has all of our utilities explain to the PUC the math of their particular situation with their particular non-renewable facilities. does it make sense from an economic perspective to idle those plants in the spring and the fall? And I'm glad that we're going to lay the bill over today, because this bill is a little bit of a work in progress. We're particularly on the reporting requirements. We're having some conversations and continuing to discuss that. But it's a neat idea, and I do have, there's a couple people I know who want to testify. I don't know if the chair wants to do amendments first or if you want to do testifiers first.
I think people would prefer testifiers first.
Okay.
Unless other folks want to move their amendments. No, I'm thinking that if you would have your testifiers come up.
Yeah, I think we have a couple people from Fresh Energy that are going to come up first.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning to members of the committee. My name is Isabel Ricker. I'm here on behalf of Fresh Energy along with Alan Gleckner. Fresh Energy is a Minnesota-based nonpartisan nonprofit organization working to advance clean energy policy that works for all Minnesotans. We appreciate the opportunity to support House File 3209 this morning to evaluate seasonal and economic power plant operation. Thank you to Representative Stevenson for highlighting this important issue and advancing policy on it. The topic of power plant operations has gained growing attention over the past few years in Minnesota and across the country. And analysis by research groups, nonprofits, and independent market monitors has shown there's a significant opportunity to advance customer savings, improve market economics, and reduce the environmental impact of power plants by modifying how we operate them. Historically, coal plants have and largely continue to run continuously throughout the year. As our electricity mix has changed, prices have dropped, and markets have evolved, these plants are now often running at below cost. In other words, they're operating at a loss. And that loss is borne entirely by customers. By taking another look at how we operate power plants and making strategic changes, there's a huge win-win opportunity here. An apt and recent example is Xcel's announcement to idle two of their coal units in the spring and fall, or the shoulder seasons, when there's typically lower demand. Xcel's analysis shows this would save customers between $90 and $130 million over 9 years and would reduce carbon dioxide emissions by 65%. Fresh Energy supports continuing to examine this issue to ensure we're making smart operational choices, improving market efficiency, and maximizing savings for both Minnesota residents and the climate. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak with you this morning, and I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
Thank you. Mr. Gleckner?
I don't have anything else. Thank you.
Representative Long has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious for what you are seeing as some of the reasons why utilities are choosing to or constrained into running non-economic coal plants.
A lot of the reason for running this way, it's called must run, is simply inertia. It's the way we've done this for quite a long time, and it used to make good sense when coal was one of the lowest cost resources. It made sense to run continuously throughout the year. There are some other legitimate reasons as well for maintenance and testing, but as markets have changed, it's time that we take another look at this, and there's a significant opportunity with improving technology for managing and operating plants to turn them on and off more frequently.
I see no other questions. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Swisinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to the testifiers, so you talked a little bit about kind of the amount of savings as far as putting out CO2 or whatever. How much will that make a difference in the environment? Will we see a decrease or an increase in temperature because of that action in the next 3 years, or what will that do?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Swisinski. We haven't done a detailed analysis on the climate. Oh, sorry, Alan Gleckner with Fresh Energy. To my knowledge, so these are Xcel's modeling numbers from their proposal with the commission. To my knowledge, there hasn't been a detailed greenhouse gas accounting, but these are significant contributors. Coal is per intensity, probably one of the biggest contributors for greenhouse gases that we have in Minnesota. And so reducing emissions from those plants by 65% a year over this proposal is a major carbon savings on the order of millions of metric tons a year.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just following up on that point about the CO2, clearly this is a worldwide cumulative effort. So one plant or two plants or all the plants that affect Minnesota by themselves will not tip the balance, of course. We all have to do our part. That's what this whole story of climate mitigation and change is about. But it seems to me that if you take that away, just the facts that Representative Stevenson pointed out about the fact that these are best practices, these are things that our energy companies should be doing and probably already are, so they know the data, and if it's going to be saving significant dollars, I'm just curious what any other objections would be other than the startup and shutdown costs periodically. And I'm sure that's factored into Xcel's decision. So it seems like it seems completely logical just from an economic point of view. And I appreciate Representative Stevenson's for bringing this bill forward, and I think it's time we do this. So thank you.
Representative Swisinski.
Thank you. And this is just a general question, just looking at the bill. In 2.28, it says protections employed by the electric utility to ensure the pilot project does not unreasonably increase to ratepayers or negatively impact utilities' ability to provide reliable electric service. What does unreasonable mean, and how could we, what is a quantifiable number that is directly attributed to that?
I don't know. Do you have it? Are you? Madam Chair, I don't know if Representative Swisinski is asking that to the testifiers or to me.
Or just anyone.
There are
like
other
to
testifiers too, but I'm happy to say that, you know, the idea here is to have the PUC evaluate reliability. It's a concept that they do on a regular basis. This is why we have a PUC, to evaluate the evidence as to the factors that we care about. So, you know, a reasonable test and focusing on reliability. Is exactly in the PUC's wheelhouse. I don't know if Fresh Energy has anything to add to that.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. On the unreasonably increased rates, I think, like Representative Stevenson said, that's a balancing of factors that the Commission does a lot of times. Rate making can be complicated. A lot of these factors of running these plants uneconomically actually runs through the fuel clause, which is a rider and not technically a rate. That's set by the Commission. It's just a pass-through, and so you might see an enormous amount of savings on the fuel clause side and maybe a slight uptick on the rate side technically, in which case on net you're saving a ton of money for customers. But if this were written without unreasonably and it was just a straight-up any increase in rates would negate the proposal, then we're not doing something that would end up saving a ton of money because of a technicality here. Also, you're looking at rates over a period of time. So are we saying it's not going to increase rates tomorrow, but it would save customers money over 5 years? So there's a temporal scale. So I think we typically see a reasonableness test and a balancing that the Commission does on these matters very frequently.
Madam Chair, just kind of a follow-up to that. What would you say in the past the PUC has used as a reasonable and versus what you feel is going to be doing into the future as reasonable?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know if I'm understanding your question fully, but I don't have a specific example.
Finish, Representative Swisinski. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just address this to the author, and you can hand the answer off whichever way you want. As I'm reading this, this really ties into just the fuel cost. Is that what the rate, how do I want to say this? When you're starting up and shutting down these particular plants, that's when you typically get the most trouble. That's when something breaks down. So does that play into
the cost? I'm just wondering what is all entailed in that tells my constituents that they are actually getting the best deal, so to speak. Because are you including in whether that startup is counting in that the burners are, you know, get blow up or whatever you want to call them, get stuck with all the powdered coal that gets flown in, pumped into the burners. I mean, what all is entailed in determining whether you're actually saving money for the constituents or not?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney, that's a great question. I think if you look at Section 1 of the bill, lines 1.19 through 1.21, you'll see that what we're going to be looking at here is not just fuel costs, but operations and maintenance costs, capital expenditures, associated reductions in revenue. So the idea is look at the whole picture, mm-hmm. right? Because what you articulated is a lot of the reason, and I think Fresh Energy can clarify if I misspeak here, but a lot of the reason why these plants have been run on a continuous basis historically is that the costs to ramp down and ramp up are not insignificant. But right now, the dynamic is that the fuel costs and other costs associated with running these plants are so great that those ramp down and ramp up costs are mitigated by the savings that you can make by not expending the fuel. But
thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Mahoney. Representative Stevenson is correct, and the what we're seeing from Excel is that they have done this analysis and looked at both fuel savings and variable operations and maintenance savings and capital expenditure savings, and that is where we get the 90 to 130 million over the period from now to 2028. And that's one of the reasons we are very excited about this bill, including this analysis in resource planning going forward, because that is a place to take a holistic look at a plant's economics and to do it on a regular basis to make sure we're making these decisions at the best time. And the last thing I would say is that, I lost my point.
I hate that when that happens.
But in any case, yes, I think the bill would be taking into account those other factors. And, as Excel has demonstrated, it is possible to do this ramping up and down more frequently, and in particular, idling the plants seasonally, which is not entirely shutting them off, reduces some of that ramp up, ramp down cost in those shoulder months. Does that make sense?
Thank you for the testifiers. Mr. Evans is ready to testify.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the bill, and I want to thank Representative Stevenson for authoring the bill and bringing it forward. I don't have too much to add to what's already been discussed. Xcel Energy did file on December 20th a plan with the Public Utilities Commission. I brought 25 copies of the filing, and I thought rather than me try to explain what's in the filing, I might just share this with the members of the committee. You probably aren't going to want to sit and read it during the committee session because it's a little dense, but essentially what that tells you is what you've already heard, which is when our resource planning modelers start going through their models, which is a computer process, I'm sure you understand, where different variables and different assumptions are put in place, and then we see what kind of result it gives us in terms of cost and reliability and carbon emissions, among many other things. The conclusion was that, or at least the, not quite a conclusion, but a little more than a theory, was that we could do this seasonal dispatch of these plants and actually save money, maintain reliability, and reduce carbon emissions. And so what we proposed to the PUC in this filing is that we want to try it out. It's important to keep in mind, and I think this is reflected in the bill, that, you know, you do your modeling and you come out with an idea of how this might work, and then reality hits and you want to make sure that you're watching what you're doing to make sure that reality is matching up with your modeling. We do that in our rate cases. We do that in our resource planning. All of it is based on modeling as we look towards the future. And so we think that Section 2 of this bill particularly, you know, helps move that process forward, gives the PUC the authority in case they didn't have it to approve this kind of dispatch, and provides enough safeguards that both the utility and the Public Utilities Commission can watch the process as it unfolds to make sure it's accomplishing the goals that we think it's going to accomplish when we made the filing. I will say on Section 1, we do have some concerns about some parts of Section 1. Talked with Representative Stevenson about it, and he's agreed that we should sit down and work through those to make sure that the information, I guess showing the homework, is we're showing the right homework and we're showing useful homework, and that it's that the PUC is getting information that's going to be useful to them. And so we look forward to sitting down with him over the next couple of days and walking through that process.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Evans, and I too want to commend Xcel for taking this step with the filing for the PUC. I've seen estimates that across MISO there's more than $1 billion that are being shifted towards ratepayers from running uneconomic coal plants, and I think this is the responsible thing to do, not only for ratepayers but also for the climate. I'm curious what Xcel sees as some of the constraints currently to being able to de-designate some of your coal plants from must-run, and why you're thinking that you want, like, either legislation or the PUC to assist with that.
Madam Chair, Representative Long, my smart alecky short answer is read with the thing I just handed out. It'll tell you that, and that may be the best answer that I can give you. You know, there. What I can tell you is that dispatching plants is an extremely complicated matter. Which is why I can't tell you much more about it than that. It not only deals with reliability and cost, but it also deals with the grid, with MISO, with all of our neighboring utilities, and all of these things that interact. Maintaining voltage support, which means that generation has to come on at certain places at certain times in a certain amount. And so all of this is a very, very complex problem, and I think if you read through the 14 pages that I just handed out, you'll see that there's a lot of factors that go into this. And so while we think we've got it all figured out in the modeling, and we think that, you know, we see how this is going to work, the fact is we don't really know until we try it, and that's the point of doing it.
Representative Spasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question to Mr. Evans. Do you need Section 2 to actually do this of the bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't think that question's been answered. We obviously filed the petition with the idea that the PUC would have the authority, would see themselves as having the authority to grant the petition, or we wouldn't have filed it. So, but I think that obviously the PUC takes direction from the legislature, and so we, I don't know if you call it belts and suspenders or if you just call it, you know, whatever you want to call it, but that's what we're looking at here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just one follow-up. You know, it was brought up earlier, section, I forget what section part of the bill was talking about unreasonable increases. You know, what do you folks at Xcel kind of consider into that realm of unreasonable, and how would you define that?
Well, I can't. I think that, you know, what is unreasonable will be in the eye of the beholder. The first thing I'll do is say, as Fresh Energy did, that ultimately the five members of the Public Utilities Commission are the deciders of what is an unreasonable increase. The process at the PUC is very robust. Everybody gets to weigh in, from our large customers to low-income customers to the environmental community to the business community and all across the board. And so there will be, I'm sure, an active debate over whether this is causing increases that are unacceptable or not. So, and Xcel Energy is frankly concerned. You know, our goal, when our CEO announced that we wanted to get to 100% carbon free by 2050, there was a second part of that, which maybe should have been the first part, which was and not have our customers' bills increase more than the rate of inflation. So that's been the standard that has been laid out to us in our direction from our boss about how we're supposed to do this. Whether that's exactly the right standard of what's reasonable or not, that's the one that we've been applying.
Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Evans, thank you for being here and testifying, and thank you for being a leader in this area as a company. And my question relates to the fact that you're doing this research, you're analyzing your use, you're looking at the economics all the time. Going forward, if this bill were to pass, you would still have complete freedom to analyze your economics, and if you decided to go back and use more coal, you could do that, correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, I believe so.
Thank you.
Thank you for testifying. There were no other testifiers signed up, so we're going to take amendments. Representative Swazinski, are these your amendments?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Representative Swazinski moves the A1 amendment. Tell us about it.
This amendment would expand the scope of the study to examine reliability impacts on a larger MISO power grid. Individual utilities obviously don't have separate power grids. They're all interconnected. What one utility does or does not do on their own system may have impacts on neighboring utilities, in some cases states away. So that's essentially what the A1 does, to kind of potentially expand it a bit to see how this would potentially impact the larger MISO grid and our neighbors.
Representative
I'd ask
Stevens.
For a roll call if I could. Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm going to ask members to vote against the A1 amendment. First of all, the bill already includes reliability as to the utilities grid. I don't think the utility is in a good position to assess reliability across all of MISO, and I also think it's not necessary. In order to remove a generating facility from production on MISO, you have to apply to MISO. So MISO is going to do that analysis. We don't need to require the utilities to do it, and I don't think the utilities are in a position to do it anyway. So I'd ask for a no vote.
I see no questions. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes no.
Representative Wong?
No.
Representative Swazinski?
Yes.
Representative Acom?
No.
Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Bierman?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Mahoney?
No.
Representative Meckland?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Stevenson?
No.
Six ayes, nine nays. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Swazinski, do you have another amendment?
Yes, I also have the A2 amendment, Madam Chair.
Representative Swazinski offers A2. Would you talk to us about it?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment would include in the study data on the use of renewable generating units to support system reliability. Frequently, units are dispatched not because of the cheapest, but because we actually need that kind of underlying voltage support and reactive power. So, on the grid. So turning these resources off for 6 months of the year threatens potentially grid reliability across the system. So essentially that's what the A2 amendment does. I'd appreciate your support.
Madam Chair, members, I'd ask you to vote against the A2 amendment. The bill does ask utilities and the Public Utilities Commission to focus on reliability. I don't believe that the specific, and that is very important, but I don't think the specific data that has been requested here is necessary to make that determination.
I don't see any questions. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
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 Amendment is not adopted. There is a third amendment.
Yes, this would be the A4 amendment, Madam Chair.
Pardon?
The A4 amendment, Madam Chair.
If you would explain your amendment.
Yes, I would like to. So the A4 amendment simply prohibits the pilot programs from resulting in higher consumer rates. you know, advocates for this policy, we heard from testimony, claim that it will save millions of dollars, up to $55 million or $65 or $100 million per year over the three-year window of this from operating costs. So there's simply no reason for the pilot program to result in higher rates. So this essentially would also insert the word reliability as part of that conversation.
Madam Chair, I would like to move to divide the amendment between lines 1.2 and 1.3.
Representative Stevenson moves to divide the amendment between lines 1.2 and 1.3. Which one would you want to take first?
You can take the top half first if that's fine with the amendment author. So I would accept that the line 1.1 and 1.2 of the amendment, I think it's, as I keep saying, reliability should be a piece of the of what we're looking at, and I don't have a problem with adding it to that subdivision 2D.
Members, we're going to vote on the first part of the amendment, line 1.1 and line 1.2. The chair has said he would accept that. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? That part of the amendment is adopted. The second part of the amendment?
I'm going to ask, I'll be very candid. I was going to ask everyone to oppose it, but to be very candid, I had thought about accepting this amendment because I kind of agree with the premise that if this isn't saving ratepayers money, we shouldn't be doing it. But I think Mr. Gleckner from Fresh Energy articulated that the way rates are structured, not having this language in it could have an unintended consequence. You know, the ratepayer may net save money on the project, but certain rates may go up or down. So what I would ask the committee to vote against it today, and what I'd commit to the amendment's author is that I'll continue to work on this, and I don't have a problem putting something in the bill that says if the project isn't going to save people money, shouldn't be doing it under this section.
But I'll just withdraw the amendment then.
Okay.
The amendment has been withdrawn. Okay. So we have a few minutes. If there nobody else has signed up to testify, but if anybody in the audience would want to speak for or against the bill, we'd have 1 or 2 minutes to do that. I don't see anyone. So with that, Representative Stevenson, would you renew your motion that House File 3209, as amended, that be laid over for possible inclusion?
That is my motion.
The bill is laid over. Thank you. Representative Stevenson, you have another bill.
I do have another bill. This bill is a fairly straightforward bill that is just about transparency. You know, I think people should know, as a basic principle, people should be able to know what they're paying for. And I think that there is increased interest across the state of Minnesota and, in fact, across the country in the issue of climate change and in the issue of where our electricity comes from. And so this bill makes it easy for customers to know exactly where their energy is coming from, or what they're paying for, right? It requires utilities to provide their energy mix to their customers. The bill, as written before you, says on a semi-annual basis. You're going to see an author's amendment in a minute that takes it down to once a year. But basically, it just says include that in the bill once a year. Let people know what they're paying for. Very straightforward bill. And I do have an author's amendment. It's, I believe, the A4.
Okay. Representative Stevenson, would you move the bill first?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I would move that House File 3054 be laid over.
Representative Stevenson has moved that House File 3054 be laid over. And you have an author's amendment. You're offering your author's amendment at this point.
That's right. I'm just offering the A4 amendment as an author's amendment. Gets the bill in the shape that I want the committee to consider it. Most of what the amendment does is change it from a semi-annual report to an annual report. It also clarifies that utilities are supposed to be providing sort of the average of the mix over the course of the year. There was some ambiguity that was pointed out to me so it cleans up some language.
So this is the author's amendment, A4. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? The amendment is adopted. So So I see that the author does not have testifiers, but we have had Joyce Pepin from MREA sign up to testify if she would like to. Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, I just happen to know that former Representative Pepin is stuck in traffic today. I just happen to know.
She's behind you.
Oh, she just got here.
You can't see her. I have no
Joyce, how about sending an update text message next time, all right?
It's more fun when you get caught.
She doesn't drive a Tesla, so she got
here. Yes, thank you. Thank you. I wanted to rush here, that's why. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for having me here today. My name is Joyce Pepin, and I represent MREA, Minnesota Rural Electric Association, which represents the 44 distribution co-ops and the six G&Ts that power them. And I didn't have a lot of time to review the author's amendment, but I do appreciate the update to an annual reporting period. I would just point out that just generally any type of reporting is very difficult for the small co-ops. And I know that you know that. And it looks like you made some changes to the MISO concern that I had about being able to get that information on a timely basis. So I do appreciate the author's amendment. And I would just generally ask you to consider electric co-ops and the difficulty that is created and the potential cost increase when you have small co-ops that have to do reporting that they otherwise wouldn't have to do when they've only got maybe 14 or 15 workers and half of them might be line people. So that would go for this bill or any number of the bills. But at this time, I would probably like to talk with the author about the specific language in the bill at a later time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I can just say generally to the audience and that I'm happy, the bill's being laid over, happy to continue to have the conversation about how we can make these reports less of a burden on all of the utilities, recognizing that we have a lot of small utilities in Minnesota.
Well, one would assume that they're getting all of their information from their co-ops that generate.
Right.
And the co-ops that generate are all very sophisticated and smart. So with that, there are amendments. Representative Swasinski, are you on board for A3?
No, Madam Chair. I do believe Representative Baker has that amendment.
Oh, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. Again, as we just heard from Ms. Pepin, I guess I'm wondering, being kind of this former Muni guy and the co-ops, it is different. And I appreciated your comments about let's work on this as it moves forward. Let's at least cut that out now for purposes of what they have to do to get the information out there. This is a big deal to them. I will tell you this. They are very good at communicating with their members that they see in the grocery stores and in the churches, and they tell their folks through constant newsletters in their mailings what their mix is, what their rates are. We can do a better job with that, but I guess I'm just asking that we include the A3 amendment today as a friendly amendment to really just sort of recognize that their economies of scale are much, much different, and they're doing a lot of this now. They don't need more of the rules and statutes at that level, so I'm asking that you take this as a friendly.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, I appreciate your spirit, but I am not going to accept it as a friendly amendment. I am actually, I was going to move to divide this amendment between lines 1.10 and 1.11. I'm sorry, 1.9 and 1.10 is what I meant. I forgot the insert. 1.9 and 1.10.
Stevenson has moved to divide the amendment between lines 1.19 and 1.10.
And the first part goes to what Representative Baker was just discussing. And I thought I heard him say that the utilities already sort of provide that information to their members, which would indicate that this isn't all that onerous of a requirement on munis and co-ops. I represent ratepayers that are pay into Xcel, into Conexus, and into Anoka. So I have a IOP, a co-op, and a muni in my district. And I think all of my constituents would like to know where their energy is coming from, not just those that live in the Xcel territory. So I would oppose the first half of this amendment.
Okay, members, the first half of the amendment is before you. The author asks you to vote no. All those in favor say aye.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
All those who oppose say no.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. The second part of the amendment.
Yes, the second part I actually like, and I will take it. It is having some transparency about electrical cost. So I think it's a good one.
Members, we will still vote on that.
Madam Chair.
Yes, if I could just.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to point out that on the first word on line 1.12 is public utilities, so this part of the amendment would refer only to public utilities.
That's thank you, Mr. Eliff, and we'll maybe work on that in since the bill's being laid over.
Members, we do have to vote on this. And the author suggests you vote aye. All of those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposition? The amendment is adopted.
Just raise your hand. The next one.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, and you mentioned that a big part of this is transparency.
Yes.
So the A5 amendment, it would be including also the cost to prepare
excuse
these.
Excuse me, Representative Mecklen, which amendment would you?
Oh, I'm sorry, the A5.
Representative Mecklen moves the A5 amendment.
So it simply is asking that the cost to produce and distribute the report be included in your annual report.
And Madam Chair, I oppose the amendment. Ask people to vote no. I think it's unnecessary.
I see no questions or discussion, and the author asks the members to vote no. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say no.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. There is another amendment, Amendment 6. Representative Swazinski.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the A6 amendment, part of this report is going to be kind of that energy mix and what things are at in kind of a short period of time. And I think it's important for our constituencies, if this bill is to move forward, to see kind of what the long-term trend line is so that they can get a real grasp at what's been done in the past and what's being done in the near future. And so this would just expand that time period out to a 20-year span. So when they're seeing that graph and they see the drastic reduction in the use of current fuels, that they get a good idea of kind of what's been going on so they can grasp that. I think that might be a better help constituencies and focus groups to understand where we've been and where we are today. And I ask for a roll call. Thank you.
Representative Swazinski has moved A6. Ask for a roll call. Representative Stevenson.
I'd ask members to vote no, Madam Chair, on this amendment. I think it pretty dramatically expands the amount of data that the utilities are required to provide. We're kind of switching positions here about wanting to not burden our utilities, so I'd ask them for a no vote.
A roll call has been requested on this bill. I see no questions or comments. The chair votes no.
Representative Long. Representative Swazinski.
Yep.
Representative Acomb.
Yes.
Representative Baker.
Aye.
Representative Bierman. Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Mecklen?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Stevenson?
No.
There's 6 ayes, 8 nays, and 1 absent. The amendment is not adopted. I see another amendment, A7. I don't see an author for A7. I see another amendment, A8. I don't see an author for that. So with that, I think Representative Stevenson is going to renew his motion.
Madam Chair, can I speak to the
Yes, Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, where did the A8 amendment come from?
I don't have an answer to that. I don't know where it came from.
Okay, I'm just curious. It's a bizarre amendment.
I was going to accept it. I was going to accept it.
Madam Chair and Representative Stevenson, on page one, lines 19 to 23, can you just elaborate on what that language means?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I think this is the part of the bill getting at establishing that they need to say what the fuel mix is that the customer is paying for.
Right. So, Madam Chair and Representative, so why would the electricity that's generated in Louisiana be relevant to the mix up here? Why would we be using the entire system-wide generation?
And Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, if you're a customer who purchases from a utility that is buying their power off the grid, buying it off MISO on a wholesale basis, then production in Louisiana might very well be relevant. The overall mix of the MISO market is going to be indicative of what you're paying for. So the idea here is what the dollars that you are giving to the utility, what is that going to pay for? And for many of our electrical customers in Minnesota, their utilities are buying from MISO.
So, Madam Chair, and so Representative Stevenson, when that happens, you're right, they're purchasing it off the wholesale market. There's a mix, there's a portfolio of generation that's out there, but the actual electrons that customers are using, the ones from Louisiana just never make it up here.
Right.
So how would you account for that discrepancy? Because it would seem to me that we're going to be reporting inaccurate data here, that the actual electricity being consumed in Minnesota is not going to be reflective of the overall mix. It's going to be a combination of factors, including the geographic proximity of the generation that is being sold on the market.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, your point is correct. At least, so I'm going to start by saying I'm a lawyer and not an engineer, and so I may mix this up a little bit. But what the bill is trying to get at is what are you paying for, not necessarily what you are consuming. In the energy space, those things are different. And as you, I think, correctly point out, what you are consuming is a little bit tougher to quantify because of you can't track individual electrons and you can't steer individual electrons. But what we can know is what are we paying for? Your dollar that goes into your utility is going to purchase some amount of electricity from someone, and we can measure that.
And Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, thank you. It's a good clarification point to know. So with regards to that point, when it comes to renewable energy credits, this sort of renewable alchemy we have where we take coal energy and we automatically say that it's solar or renewable, how would that factor into this?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I believe that if your utility is purchasing credits, I'm just looking at the language of the bill, and that might be something that we could seek to clarify going forward, because I think it actually is maybe a little ambiguous in here. But my intention certainly would be that if your dollars are going to pay for renewable energy credits, that your bill should reflect that. The report should reflect that your dollars are going to pay for renewable energy.
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, but it's not. It's not paying for renewable energy. It's paying for the ability to say that your coal energy, ta-da, is now renewable. Someone else is purchasing the power in another state. They're probably not even in the MISO region if you buy the credits from a place like Nevada. So how would that be reflected? Is it reflected as kind of putting covering on coal, or would it be categorized as purchasing renewable energy?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, it's going to be reflected as that's the way your dollar is being spent. It's going to pay someone to produce renewable energy.
But Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, it's not. That's not what the money is used for. Someone else is buying the renewable generation. Someone else is consuming the renewable generation. These are just credits that certify that say, oh, this generation, it's renewable. So someone else has already paid for the power. So
who gets the money from the credit when you purchase the credit?
Madam Chair and Representative Stevenson, the person, the entity that generated it gets the money, but they're not getting money for producing generation. They're getting money to give a little certificate that they hand out saying, look at this power, this nice power, it's nice and clean and it's renewable. It's not the actual generation. So my question is that money, is that considered, even though you're buying a REC, you're not buying the generation, does that get categorized as renewable generation, or does it get categorized as kind of the cost of meeting a mandate? How would you allocate that cost? Because it's not, you understand it's not producing the, it's not buying the power. Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Graffel, I understand your argument, but I would say that if you are producing something and someone is paying you money because you produce something, then you are being paid for producing something. In any event, I do agree with you that there may be some ambiguity in this language that could be cleaned up and the bill's being laid over, and I will give you my word that I'll work on it.
All right, that's cool. And then, Madam Chair, final question. Just this one and the other policy bills today, maybe it's a question for you, Madam Chair. Are these going to be negotiated and worked out with the Senate at your level, or are these items going to be for the leadership tribunal? And if it's the leadership tribunal, do we know when they're going to start meeting so members can kind of track things?
We will be working this out, and you'll be seeing it in committee fairly soon.
Good. So no leadership tribunal this year?
You just asked about these bills.
Oh, okay, just these. Okay, so thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, what exactly, I guess, is your intent of giving this more information to the customers? I mean, it's a lot of information, and what can they actually do about it once they have that?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Baker, I think that my intent is that people should know what they're paying for, as I said at the outset. What can they do with it? Well, you know, for example, if you are in a co-op, then you are, you know, a member owner of that co-op. And if you don't like the mix of energy that your utility is purchasing, or you don't like the general direction of your co-op, I think as you have some knowledge of, you can go and run for the board or talk to board members and try and influence the direction that your co-op is going.
And Madam Chair, just a follow-up, you're right. I think it's the part of my concern is we are going to start having our electric bills and inserts to be the size of the pharmaceutical pages you get with your prescription, and people won't read anything anymore. I think we just have to be very careful about what we're doing, how we're doing it, what we're mandating, what we're paying the utilities to pay. I continue to ask for consideration for the munis and the co-ops. There's a different model, and every time this committee does something that isn't rightly squared up with rural Minnesota versus the large utilities, it's a mark against rural Minnesota because they don't have the same ability to compete with Xcel Energies with millions of customers, with, for example, Wilmer Utilities with 8,000 customers. It is a totally different game, and I want to continue to bring that up at this committee this year because you're hurting rural Minnesota every time we look the other way and say it doesn't matter because they should have that same information. I don't disagree with that information. It's how they get it and the cost it is to those small utilities in that way. So I'm just asking the committee to consider that every time you say no to a muni and a co-op, it's not the same as saying no to a very large public utility or an investor-owned utility, excuse me. So I just want to make sure that that's clear, and I appreciate the information to some degree, but again, it's going to overkill it, and these small markets are different. So please, I hope that we can be aware of that this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Baker, as someone who's been a member of a rural co-op for maybe 40 years, I don't know exactly the number. I think my co-op is extremely competent. It's very small. It's very rural. And so I don't want us to think, I want us to think better of them. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your comments on that our rural cooperatives and rural municipals are competent. I think that's an important subject matter to bring up here. I mean, there are other bills, folks, that you guys are carrying that putting mandates on our rural cooperatives. And Representative Stevenson himself that said, hey, I want to know what my fuel mix is so that I can run for the board and I can change it if I want to. This legislature doesn't have to do it. These folks are locally elected officials that represent the fuel mix and represent their member owners in our rural cooperatives. So when you guys step into the mix and say, hey, you know what? We think you guys are smart. We think you guys are capable. to create a piece of paper, but you're not capable to actually run the fuel mix that you desire best, that suits your cooperative best. I think that's a little bit condescending. So if you're going to move that forward for a piece of paper and a report, let that same attitude carry through for all your other policy decisions, too, and let rural utilities and let municipal power make their own decisions. If you want to regulate a regulated entity like Xcel and the rest, invest your own. That's your constituents, and that's your prerogative. But let folks that represent rural areas and rural utilities make their decisions as well. Thank you.
Representative Stevenson renews his motion that House file, this is 3054, be laid over. The bill is laid over.
That is my motion.
And then Representative Christensen, you are next. This is the third bill on our agenda. Representative Christensen, would you like to move House File 3101 and then be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome. Would you? There is an author's amendment. Let's take that right away. Because it is a delete all. To put the bill in the order that the author would like it. So we're dealing with DE1. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposition? DE1 is adopted. Would you like to explain your bill, and then we'll hear from your testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. This is a pretty simple bill. It is just requiring utilities to twice annually begin, you know, we'll have one insert in September of 2020, and then twice annually to include in billing information about conservation and renewable energy options provided by the utility. It provides clarity and transparency to consumers, and to be honest, I think most utilities already do this, but we're just putting this into law. I would also like to introduce Ann Levinson-Falk of the Citizens Utility Board to provide some insight.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, members. My name is Annie Levinson-Falk. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board, or CUB, which is a nonprofit advocate for Minnesota's residential and small business energy consumers. We help people understand their utility bills and their options, and we work to make sure that regular Minnesotans are represented before the legislature and the Public Utilities Commission. CUB looks at all legislation that's introduced from the perspective of how it will affect consumers, and so I was asked to come today and share that perspective on this bill. Almost everybody who calls CUB is looking to save money on their energy bills. And one of the best ways to do that is to use less energy. So we spend a lot of time helping people understand their conservation options. Most people don't know that their utility is required by law to offer conservation measures like discounts on to help them seal air leaks in their homes or help them to get energy efficient appliances that can save a substantial amount of money over the long term. I would say the number two reason that people call us is to get renewable energy. For example, last week a woman called me who had seen an ad for a particular community solar garden, and she was thinking of signing up, and so she wanted to call and get more information about was that a good idea for her. So we helped her understand what a community solar subscription is, how it works, the kinds of questions she might want to ask if she's looking at into whether it's a good option for her. And also the range of other renewable options that are available, including through her electric utility directly. And of course, the cleanest and the cheapest energy is always the energy that you don't use. So in addition to renewable options, we again always encourage folks to start with conservation. Utilities offer a lot of good conservation and renewable energy options right now, but there's a real lack of awareness in the public about what's available. The information that utilities would share pursuant to this bill would be very useful for consumers, so CUB is happy to support it.
Representative Spasinski, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So the last bill that we heard moved it from, it was at one point in time written for twice a year, and he switched it to 1 year. Is there a reason why you would continue to do it twice a year? And then I have a follow-up question to that.
Thank you, Representative. Twice a year, I think, would be adequate for people to have access to that information more than just once a year. So it's that simple that they, twice a year, they'll be exposed to that information on their bill so they'll know what their options are.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If nothing changes, would there be an amendment that would allow the utility not to have to resend it if nothing changed as far as their mix?
No. The utilities would put it in twice a year.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Christensen, just kind of some questions about it. Where did this idea come from? Do you feel that the issue should be different throughout the state, whether it's a rural utility or a investor-owned utility?
The idea came from myself and a few others who talked about exactly what we heard here, that many ratepayers, in rural and in XL territory, are just unaware of what's available to them. So it's a simple consumer bill that we just provide the information. I have no doubt that the folks who are members of co-ops and munis would really like the same information as the people within XL territory. They too are worried about saving energy, about climate change issues, et cetera. So they really should get the same information as everyone else does.
Madam Chair, Representative Christian, what are the penalties to utilities if they do not provide this information? Is there a misdemeanor? Is this a felony? What would this be?
I don't have any penalties in the bill.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question I have, and I think you already alluded, a lot of utilities and companies are doing. I'm a member of East Central Energy, and, we already get it's on our electric bill saying, where the power is generated from. And as I'm reading this, it's on our bill right now. And is this going to be a separate insert so it'll be, is it going to be more paper that's coming? Is it additional, or is it fine that it is on the bill itself and don't have to cut down another tree to do so?
Okay, that's a good question. I thought the same thing. No, it's, it can absolutely be printed right on the bill itself. The reason we made a little bit of a change is we wanted to make sure that that information is also included in electronic billing, which a lot of people are doing now. So, no, it doesn't have to be a separate bill insert.
I don't see any other questions or comments. We have a few minutes. Nobody else signed up to testify in this bill. We do have an amendment. I will take that. But if you want to testify for a moment or two, we welcome you to testify. In the meantime, as he's coming up, I will tell you that I went up to visit my rural co-op sometime in the fall, and it was a great visit. Sometime I'll tell you all about the whole visit. But the interesting thing was we had gotten a new hot water heater, which was electric, and I had had an opportunity that I didn't know I had. And when we were just discussing it, I found out, oh my gosh, I could have done this. And then I found that there were lots of other opportunities I had, and I didn't know about them. So I appreciate this bill. I just wanted to note that for the record while we were waiting for our testifier. If you'd like to.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. I'd actually signed up, I thought, for the previous bill as well, but the testimony is very comparable. This part seems very simple, and vast majority of our members are already providing this information. However, we do need to ask for some flexibility in how it's delivered We have a number of members who use a simple postcard approach to the mailing, so there's nothing in which the bill, the notice could be inserted. We have others that their billing is automated to a point where they can't do any inserts to the envelope. That includes the city of Rochester that has over 55,000 mailings that would have to be done in a separate manner. Currently, they use the electronic means of sending out notice and providing requests, but if they had to do it twice a year, they'd have a separate mailing for 55,000 households twice a year at an added expense. So I'd like to work with Representative Christensen and try to find a little more flexibility. The data being requested is stuff that they can provide. It's just how it's provided to not end up having unintended costs.
Thank you for the testimony. This bill will be laid over, so you will have an opportunity for conversations.
And I would like to talk more about it. Thank you.
Is there other people who want to go? I didn't see. Okay, there is an amendment.
Madam Chair. That would be my amendment, Madam Chair.
Representative Baker has the A2 amendment.
Yes, thank you. And again, Representative Christensen, thank you for, again, recognizing that a lot of our utilities in Minnesota do this already. I think in the last 10, 15 years, it's been a remarkable awareness program that I certainly have seen in greater Minnesota. As I mentioned before to Representative Stevenson on his bills, I really think that, as we just heard from the testifier from MMUA, they do need different flexibility on some utilities, and this could be a bigger hurt than you sort of can visualize, just putting a line on a bill. I know some of the folks, they just have a card with older technology that's kind of pre-printed based on the metering system, and they have very limited characters they can put on a bill. So sometimes this might require an extra mailing, and if it's twice a year, that could really add up. So with that, and again, I think to your comments earlier too, Madam Chair, your new water heater, and you didn't know that was out there. And again, if this was at your cabin out north, if that's where it was at, but if it was,
we do not have a cabin.
What's that?
I wish we had a cabin.
Okay.
We do not.
I thought you had a beautiful cabin on a lake in northern Minnesota somewhere. Anyway, what I will tell you is that what I see our utility doing in for example, the West Central area. They spend thousands of dollars a year on radio advertising talking about their conservation programs and how we can all save and what their mix is. They actually put that on the radio to really get it out there. So what I'm asking to the author is to consider this important, again, understanding of what you heard from the testifier today. Not all utilities are sort of like Excel model. And I'm wondering if the author would consider this to be a friendly amendment to, again, to set aside the co-ops and the munis at this time to allow them either more time to maybe get to you the information that might be a problem for you that you might recognize. But I'm wondering if we could, again, remove the munis and the co-ops from this mandate right now because it does affect some in a more negative effect. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to ask for a roll call on this bill.
Roll call has been asked for. Representative Long, would you comment?
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment on the amendment that certainly I think there are a lot of areas where our cooperative and municipal utilities deserve special consideration and have their own unique circumstances. But this feels like a pretty easy requirement to me. They already are tracking their renewable energy percentages, and I'm hopeful that they would be able to figure out how to include that on their existing mailings. And certainly if they came to us and said that was a challenge, we could look into that. But it feels like the 40% or more of Minnesota customers who belong to cooperatives and municipal utilities would also like to know this information. So I'd urge that we oppose the amendment.
Well, and to that question, I guess, too, again, they are doing a lot of this now. The information is out there. But again, as we heard from the testifier, they're asking to pause this and look at this differently just because there could be some problems with this because, again, they're doing a lot of it in their own way now. But in this manner, by mailing, by a certain forced mandate to tell them in a way that maybe they have other ways of doing it. Maybe they're doing it in a better way. We aren't the fixers of everything here, and especially when it comes to utilities, but especially when it comes to rural Minnesota. We have to fight for them because they're small little operations. So I hope that the author can accept this.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going to a previous question that was asked wisely by Representative Wozinski, maybe it's for Mr. Eloff or for the Chair. So one of these small municipal utilities doesn't fulfill the requirements that's filled out in statute. What happens to them? Do the Minneapolis Environment Police fly up to northern Minnesota and start seizing? Do the Green Police go on tour? What happens?
Council.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, as the author stated, there are no penalties in the bill. I don't think anything would happen.
So, Madam Chair, so they could basically, we are replacing what is currently a voluntary program with a voluntary program. Is that correct, Madam Chair?
No, I don't think that's correct. So we are asking utilities, he said if one does not do it, then there's no penalty.
Okay, well, I can, if any of the utilities are listening, I'm just asking you to do what's in this bill, and I think that has accomplished what this bill has done, because that's what we're doing, we're asking them. Representative Long, I appreciate you offering your benevolent guidance to these utilities that they are capable of doing this. Do you know what the smallest municipal utility is in Minnesota? How many customers do they have?
No, but I'm sure you do.
I do. Madam Chair, Representative Long, I do. It's 63. It's like we have these incredibly small municipal utilities, and this is why previously, even when the DFL has had total control, when you guys passed the solar energy mandate, you excluded the munis and co-ops. You didn't apply it to them. And the reason why is that it's an entirely different model. I recognize that in Minneapolis there's a model that's in place. Sometimes it works for you. A lot of times it doesn't. But in small towns and rural co-ops and areas, these are done with a phone call or the annual meetings. You don't need to be telling these guys what to do. And in fact, if my recollection is right, I think that a lot of these reporting requirements in 2017 were excluded from the smallest utilities. I believe it was 5,000, those with 5,000 members and lower. We specifically passed a law to make sure that those small co-ops don't have this. So the bill doesn't do anything. It asks them to do things. It's for places that don't have sophisticated legal departments and lawyers on staff. They're going to think that they're going to get penalized if they don't do it. It's a burden that does not really need to be imposed on our small munis and co-ops. Again, what works for Minneapolis doesn't always work for the rest of the state.
Does council have a comment?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. It appears I was in error, Madam Chair, and Representative Garofalo. In Chapter 216A, which is the Public Utilities Commission chapter, 216A07, Subdivision 2, the commissioner, referring to the Commissioner of Commerce, is responsible for the enforcement of Chapters 216A, 216B, and 237. So the Commissioner of Commerce would be responsible to enforce this provision, which is going in 216B. And the Department of Commerce has a whole forest of toolbox full of enforcement procedures that it may initiate, and would be up to the commissioner to decide what to do.
So we're empowering a commissioner to incarcerate co-op members? Is that what we're doing with this bill?
Okay, I think we've had enough fun. Representative Wozinski, did you have a question?
Yes, just a general, maybe to Mr. Eloff. So what entity would have to vote to create a sanctuary for this bill?
Members, this bill is going to be laid over, and the author has already promised that she would work with folks if there are impediments for certain smaller co-ops. Some of them are big, too. And some of them are perfectly capable, like mine, even though it's small. So with that, a roll call has been asked for. The author says vote no, and the chair votes no.
Representative Long?
No.
Representative Wozinski?
Aye.
Representative Acom?
No.
Representative Baker?
Yes.
Representative Bierman?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Meckland?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Stevenson?
No.
There are 6 ayes, 9 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Christensen renews her motion that House File 3101 be laid over. And it is laid over. Thank you. There's no other business before this committee, and we will adjourn now and see you on Thursday.